Welcome back to another episode of the Balcony Chatter Podcast. I am your host, Andrew McKenney, with my co-host, Tim Taylor.
Yes.
And it is all Celtics all the time now because Woo. My life has no meaning anymore.
Right.
Depressed all the time. Mm-hmm. Just kidding. No. I mean, I'm not kidding, but.
It's not a joke, per se.
This isn't a joke, people. You think this is a joke?
It's slightly exaggerated.
Yeah.
At most.
I mean, the good thing is we still got Celtics going. Obviously, we're going to get into the game seven win because the season could have been over, but thankfully it's not. And I'm sure that we'll get into some other things about matchup and, you know, how this series kind of went down. So I figure this is kind of your territory here. Why don't you start us off with however you want to start this?
I just want to start off by humbly saying that Jason Tatum is one of the greatest basketball players on the planet. I also want to point out a little bit of perfection that happened yesterday. Did you see what Tatum and Brown combined for?
I didn't, actually, because I was driving for the second half of the game, so I kind of missed the end of it.
51-25, which makes 76.
Seems like a lot.
Seems like a perfect amount to eliminate the 76ers with. Just chef's kiss poetry. But just another year where we got to stress out. I mean, we've seen them down 3-2. We've seen them do it against... Sorry, better teams. Sorry, Philly. No, I'm not.
Never. Philly.
Still not a rivalry. Still not a rivalry. Sorry. Go away. Still not sorry, but whatever. I was almost like, I couldn't believe Doc Rivers could lose 10 game sevens.
Yeah, that was kind of, I mean, he could because he lost 9. But, like, the fact that it actually happened is, you know, I don't feel bad I'm psyched that we won, but I do kind of feel bad for the guy. Should it have been in, like, a different series against a different team, I would have felt bad for him. You know, I love Doc, but it feels like his time is, like, kind of up as a coach. Head coach.
I mean, I do think that those types are a little bit, like dinosaurs.
That's what I'm saying.
Today's game, the changes to today's game. I think Tom Thibodeau falls into that category. But then there's like older guys who don't fall into that category. Like, you know, Popovich has, you know, defied time and space.
So then the problem is not adjusting.
Stuck in your ways, not paying attention to, you know, taking care of your guys. That's more of a Thibodeau thing. With Doc, it's like horrible rotations, bad timeout calls, horrible defensive lineups. They should have went big to match when we went big. I was upset with how long it took Mazzulla to start Robert Williams. I know he's still clearly hurt, but he doesn't need to come off the bench. He needs to set the tone out of the gate, and we need a wall down low to have any shot against Embiid. And then I thought he should match by getting Tucker out of there and starting B-ball Paul alongside Embiid. That'd be scary and like kind of a Twin Towers sort of thing. And, you know, Embiid can still stretch the floor, so it doesn't really limit you. Even though I know Tucker's got these corner threes, but give me a break. But just horrible lineups. I do think that Joe Mazzulla was so bad in this series at times that it made Doc Rivers look like a genius. Philly fans have been dying to get rid of him. I think just purely Boston fans would like him to stay there because it tends to mean that we beat them. Love Doc, love what he did, but he is a dying breed, and best of luck with future endeavors, whether that be college or back to ESPN. But, I mean, if what an extra gift that we don't deserve if they hold on to Doc Rivers for whatever reason.
Yeah. Was there any truth to that? I don't know if it was a rumor. I guess I'm going to call it a rumor because I don't know if it's true about Steve Kerr not like either getting let go from the Warriors or them thinking about it. Did you see anything about that?
I didn't chase it. It just, I saw it on ESPN and it just felt like ESPN banter. They were talking about it before the game. And then someone was talking about like, oh, he's got like a great connection with Phoenix and he'll go there. And it's like, and then someone like retorted back, like, Kevin Durant and him didn't exactly see eye to eye. So I don't think that would be a thing.
Yeah.
I am curious if it's the end of the Warriors. It feels a little soon. It feels like they could run it back one or two more years. But maybe that's it. I don't know. Maybe they are going to disband. I didn't chase it down. It just sounds like crazy.
Like, why would they do it? Like, yeah.
Dude, it the saddest thing is that, like, you look at hot takes with, like, mainstream sports coverage and, like, all the stuff that makes us sick. And really, like, you kind of, when you think about it, you assume it's like, oh, it's because they're bored. Oh, they need stuff to talk about. They start this stuff in the middle of the conference finals or like in the middle of the playoffs. It's not when they're bored. There's so much other and better shit to talk about.
Yeah.
And they just don't. Like, it's just like they just have to start something, or there's a rumor and there's this, and just like, who cares about the Warriors right now? There's four teams trying to, like, solidify their name in history.
Right.
Let's talk about them. There's plenty going on in depth with all of those. Let's talk about that. Like, obviously, we got to talk about Ja Morant, not you and I, but obviously the mainstream media does.
Sure.
But I felt like that dominated the conversation before the game way too much, especially for a Game 7 against Philly between Philly and Boston. No, I just think, you know, the coverage of ESPN is just gross to me.
It's just starting to feel like that with every sport now too. It's not just basketball. It's like, it's always more about the drama over the product on the field, the ice, the court, whatever it may be. They only want to talk about the thing that they think is going to draw eyes and ears in for drama purposes, not like, you know, whatever. Leon Draisaitl had 12 or 14 goals in two rounds of the playoffs. Like, that's not something they're going to talk about, but they're going to talk about how, you know, he got slashed and there was a big back and forth between him and Petrangelo, and look at the drama in the handshake line. You know what I mean? Like, the things that actually happened.
And that was fine. I mean, yeah. I think Draisaitl had every right to, like, punch him in the throat.
Sure, sure.
he moved on with a handshake.
Yeah, he still did it. He respected the, you know, the part
he
of the game.
He followed the code perfectly. Exactly. for being able to not really consider yourself shaking a guy's hand, but not avoiding the history and respect of what it's supposed to be.
I'll shake your hand because I have to, but not because I like you.
I thought it was class.
Yeah.
Honestly. Because, again, I think he just could have just, like, Trangelo's got his hand out and he just reaches up and punches him right in the throat. I thought that was totally in play and fine. But
whatever. I just mean, like, that, you know, everybody just cares about the drama at this point. It's not about the actual, like, crazy things that are happening on the court or whatever, you know. It's all about the extra.
And on the NBA side of it, I'm kind of into that. And at least that's still particular, like, pertaining to games. You know, it's just like, well, like, oh, what are the Warriors going to do next year? It's like, dude, in 4 weeks, we can talk about that.
Yeah,
four
right.
4 weeks, we're gonna have 3 months to 5 months of not talking about anything but that.
Yeah.
Like, shut up. Like, I don't want to dive into this Steve Kerr rumor until, if he comes out now in an exit interview and it's like, I'm probably out, I'm like, sure, I guess we'll talk about it. But as far as I know, that hasn't happened.
Right.
And apologies if I've just completely missed that. But it's just hot take patrol, you know?
Yeah.
But they do. I don't want to talk about the Warriors. I don't want to talk about, just like, you know, and it's funny because, like, they do it for the Warriors, but you don't hear it with the Bucks.
Like, yeah,
it's
right.
Not the end of time because Budenholzer got fired.
Yeah.
It's driving me nuts. Like, there's just so much to, there's so much more to talk about. I'm talking in circles now about it. But
no, I understand what you're saying for sure. I mean, it's kind of just, like you said, the biggest part is just, we have so much time when the season is over to talk about this. And I don't get why it always has to happen right immediately in the time where there's still so many other things going on. I mean, aside from the finals, literally the Eastern Conference or the conference finals is the biggest game of the season so far. So
yeah, and I totally understand that people do exit interviews, and that happens, and it has to be reported on. But there's like an hour at most, but usually a 30 to 45 minute pregame show. Why are we talking about Steve Kerr before this game?
Yeah.
I don't understand. There isn't enough time to cover what happened in all six games, nor does anyone try to. I mean, obviously we recap what the record was or whatever, but like no one even tries to tell that story of it, which is more interesting.
Yeah.
Like how a series goes is fascinating. We lost game one because James Harden went off, and you will never hear about that game because of how badly he and Embiid blew game seven.
Okay, I'm glad
pretty shocked about Embiid's comments.
I'm glad you bring that up. That's what I wanted to talk about. So I don't think we're ever going to let it slide when Philly players say something that's ridiculous. So we got to talk about that a little bit here. The fact that he said, first he said, I can't win alone. And then he said, James and I can't win alone. So first he was all about him. And really saying that, either way, saying James and I can't win alone, that's so insane to say as a team player. Like, you're the MVP. You are the face of, right now, the league. And
Harden's a former MVP.
Right, and your team.
He's obviously fallen off, but he just led the league in assists.
Well, but that's what...
And he was looking like his old self in the playoff.
Right. And not to mention, he stepped up when you didn't play game one. So when you say, I can't win on my own, he went out there and he did exactly what he needed to do to help the team in your absence because of injury or whatever, you know? So to say something like that is absolutely insane.
Just from you falling down.
I can't imagine anybody on the team is happy to hear him say that. And it just, I don't know, man. It just makes me like, if I was a player, I wouldn't want to be on his team. Yes, he's an MVP. He's an amazing player. We all know this. This is not what we're debating here. But if we're talking about a team player, if we're talking about a guy who sees you as a teammate, as a player who is like beneficial to the team, I don't think that he feels that way. I think he always looks at it as, you know, this is my team, which it is, but I am the face of this team and I am the only one who does anything. It's like, no, that's not why you guys lose every year. The comments you made are the reason that you lose every year, because clearly you're not a team. You're a guy and another guy on the team, and that's it.
That's it.
It's pathetic.
I saw an interesting piece on how, and it seemed a little Boston favoritism, so I felt weird about how I felt about it. But it is what I believe, and it's just these guys' careers are super success, like a hefty chunk of their success, and by success I mean point scoring and offensive presence, is their ability to get to the line,
right?
And but I think deep in the playoffs that turns into a reliance on that. And sorry, you know, game seven's like whistles go in pockets, like it's not like there's calls being missed, but like to rely on the officiating being whatever is this guy's point was that's where they fall short, and that's why they'll never be able to get through four rounds of the playoffs doing that.
Well, I mean, it also
it's just insane to consider such a thing.
It also
and to be honest, it makes them super boring superstars.
Right. I was just gonna say,
I don't like watching Embiid shoot 11. I don't care even if it's just 11 or 20 free throws in a game. I hate watching free throws. I don't like watching anyone shoot free throws.
Yep.
I'm not impressed with anyone's ability to get to the line. I'm impressed with someone getting an and one. But, like, baiting fouls isn't impressive or entertaining to me. It's not. I understand that it makes you a good basketball player.
I don't know about that.
And I understand that there's an art to it. I think there is. I mean, it's just like, I don't care about that part of the game. I think it's bullshit.
Well, you're just like cheating it. The system. Like, I get the, 'cause the system is broken. But, like, you're just cheating the system, and you're just better at it than other people, or you're just bigger than other people,
right?
And that's why.
And it's a system that's already in your favor.
Right, exactly. So I hate the players that are like that. But, again, like, players are trained to be that way now. You know, it is what it is. This is what the league is. But it just proves that that's the only way that you can be as effective as you are when realistically you're still one of the best basketball players on earth. You don't have to be doing that in order to show how good you are and how skilled you are at the game. So that's always been my biggest issue with the current NBA. But I also do want to say that, you know, I'm not just making these comments about Embiid because he's on the Sixers or whatever. If Tatum had said something like that, saying something like, I can't do it all, I would light him up too. I would hate that. I would be so upset that he said something like that. But you don't hear that.
No. Well, also, we can't because Jason Tatum didn't show up a lot of this series.
Sure.
And boy, oh boy, did he in Game 7.
Right. When it mattered, he did.
I didn't love his comments. I liked, like, the notion of his comments, but I didn't like the tone of it. You know what I mean? Like, I was totally with the whole, he's one of the best on the planet. But it's not that I want to see him panic in an interview, but it just didn't feel like there was any sense of, like, it felt like I'll be better rather than I got to be better. And I didn't love that, but, you know, I love the take. And in the end, I guess I don't really care because that's right. He dropped 51 points in Game 7. 51.
That was the most ever in Game 7, correct?
I believe it was. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's true. Yeah, he showed up when it mattered the most. You know, and he did play. He played fine this series, but there were a couple games where it was like, I mean, literally had zero or one or two in the first half. Like, that's not acceptable from your best player.
So he dunked about 2 minutes into the game, the first quarter of Game 7, and they put up a thing on the scoreboard that said that was his first field goal in the first quarter since Game 3.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Terrible.
But again, I mean, it's hard to make any comments about his play when, I mean, he's the reason.
Everything's totally fair. I mean, and I think he'd say it too.
No, like I get it.
He did turn it around in the game, and
yeah,
he needs to be better. I mean, we can't have him slump versus Miami, and this has been horrifying and terrifying. I hated the first half yesterday.
Yeah.
Oh God, I hated it. Third quarter was unbelievable, but it felt like two different days.
Well, that's what I worry about with this team. It's like you sometimes you never know what you're going to get, even from half to half. And that's what worries me. But it also is fun to watch because it's like, all right, we're down by 10 at the half. It's close. We can come back and win this game. And then we could come back and blow them out too. Like, I don't think we were down by 10 at half yesterday, but either way, it's scary, but it's fun at the same time. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
They kept us at like six, like from between five and like nine.
Yeah.
For like a while in the second quarter yesterday, and I hated it. It just didn't feel like anything could fall, and it felt like Jason Tatum was finally back on, but we were like just hanging from a distance. I was stressed out in the first half, big time.
I mean, it ended up working out in our favor clearly by a mile, and I feel like that's exactly what they needed going into this series against Miami. Where, you know, you've always said all along, Miami is not a team that I really want to play because they could be sneaky good. Especially, you know, we've both talked about how if Butler's on, it's a completely different team. Like if he's on or if he's off. It's two separate teams, but he's been on pretty frequently as of late. Obviously, they made it this far, It's not going to be a sweep. Anybody who says it's going to be a sweep, I don't think so. I think that's insane.
I'll be borderline blown away.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't wanted to face the Heat. Part of me felt like we were safe. We're not. We are facing the Heat. This is, I don't know how much better it is than playing the Bucks. I really don't. They're beaten down. They're missing key players. They seem stronger since that. My whole thing is that they're just very reliant on Jimmy Butler, you know, averaging around 35 points a game. Can he do that in entire playoffs? No. But then it's like, I don't like that I'm reliant on Jimmy Butler running out of gas. Like, we can and should beat this team, but I do not like the odds that are coming out about how the Celtics have a 97% chance to win this series. I just, Miami thrives on being the counted out dogs.
I was going to say, back against the wall. Yeah, back against the wall is when they really thrive.
And everything that's coming out is just like, all right, so Celtics Lakers finals, maybe? Wow. Or like, let's see what happens, Lakers Nuggets. And it's like, this is maybe about to be the most entertaining, and therefore for you and I, stressful series to watch yet. And we just had to suffer through six games with Atlanta, which was annoying, and just feel dead inside for the last 5 days over the Boston Celtics going down 3-2, losing game five at home. It's not been fun so far. I'm just glad the Sixer series is over. I did not enjoy it. I did not enjoy it at all. I enjoyed the third quarter yesterday. That was my favorite part of the whole time. And then I was just waiting for them to somehow let a 25-point lead slip to, like, 13 and, like, just have another heart attack.
Yep.
You've
been a Boston fan for too long.
It's mostly just this team this year.
Really. Yeah, but I mean, thinking back on Boston sports history, it's like they always have to do everything in the most dramatic fashion. I don't care what team it is.
No, you're right. You're right.
Every team is going to either force a game seven or have some crazy comeback that you thought it was over, or, you know, everything always has to be super dramatic. So I don't believe anything's over until it's over.
It's true. You're not wrong.
When is game one?
That series is over. We're talking Wednesday, man.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. It'll be the day after this drops. The Heat are going to be annoying. I'm curious what the starting lineup will be. I don't think we should go back to Derek White necessarily. I really like starting Rob. And I really like White and Brogdon coming in off the bench at the same time. That's a nice, like, second punch there. Even though, you know, White didn't really have a great game, Brogdon did have a solid one yesterday. Brogdon was solid throughout the Philly series. I know there's one game where he couldn't get it to fall, but I still liked every look he put up. Al Horford came back with his shooting. You know, Marcus Smart, who did he turn into at the end? Just unbelievable.
I think that they know what to expect with Miami, which is a good and a bad thing at the same time. So, like, I don't think they're going to underestimate them, but I also hope that they don't just assume that they're going to walk over them.
No, I think we can win one in Miami, but I don't know that we can win both at home to open the series.
I feel like game one is the harder of the two.
I agree. I mean, we just dropped a game one without Embiid. Yeah. And Jimmy's going to be ready. They've had a little bit longer of a breather.
Yeah.
They need it. And then you got the conversation about, I've heard people saying, when's Tyler Hero going to come back? Is it possible soon? Because it was a broken hand. I mean.
Yeah, I thought he was done, like, no matter what.
I don't know.
Interesting.
Maybe it wouldn't be this series, never fine.
Also, coming back off a broken hand in basketball, like, even if, you know,
it's his shooting hand, but still, like,
the first couple games, I can't imagine, even if you're healed, is going to be ideal.
Yeah.
But this is why I'm not a professional athlete. Yet. But when I grow up, man.
You will not play for a broken hand.
So how are you feeling overall about this series? Like, I don't want to ask you for a series prediction. I know you're gonna say Celtics are gonna win, but do you think that? All right, let me ask you this: do you think this is gonna go seven?
I think it's possible for sure. I'm expecting it to, but that's that state of mind, I guess, that you're talking about, which is like, of course we're gonna go seven against Miami. I don't think we should. I think we're you know, we're far and away the best team, what roster wise remaining in the playoffs. I don't believe that we're far and away the best team right now. I think Miami's got a little bit of a mental edge. I think the Los Angeles Lakers are doing things that are really stressful and annoying. And I think they might be the hottest team right now. And then who knows? I mean, the Nuggets could just like stand right up to them and like body them to the floor and beat the hell out of them. I feel like we should be able to gentleman's Miami, but it would be crazy if we were able to get through Miami any faster than Atlanta or Philly.
No, but I'm not.
Maybe things are clicking in a new way, but you know, it just doesn't feel that way. It does like these last two games, but that just also feels like way too small of a sample size for me to believe that. Well, dude, we're so hot right now. We're not. Yeah.
Well, I think game one is going to be a big tell.
I guess you could call it the tell.
Yeah.
You
know? If they end up blowing them out, which I highly doubt, then you could start to feel better about, you know, where we are on fire right now. We're continuing that, especially with a few days off. And I think that we could feel better about how this series is going to go. Now, I'm not getting ahead of myself here because I'm not even saying that it is going to happen. I'm just asking you, if it was Celtics-Lakers in the finals, are you selling like your car to go to a game or what's the deal?
I had this exact conversation. Yeah. And with my buddy Nick Holman. And Nick was like, how are we going? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, yeah.
I think if I sell my car, I can get you and I into one game.
Yes.
Oh my god. Yeah. I don't know.
If we make it that far, we got to throw up like a GoFundMe just to get you into the game. God.
Jesus. I can't even think about that.
No, I know.
But Nick was funny. Nick was like, I don't want the Lakers for the reason that it's right there.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, we're very close to crypto.com and, that would be intense.
I mean, obviously it's like let's not even talk about like the Lakers and the Celtics. Let's just say going to the NBA finals is like a bucket list thing. I mean, you've been to the World Series multiple times now.
I've been to Game 7 Eastern Conference Finals, Paul Pierce versus LeBron James with the Celtics Cavs, where Celtics pulled it off, and that was the year they won. I've been to Game 6 of the 2013 World Series where the Red Sox won in Boston. I've been to 2018 in L.A. where they won. I've been very fortunate. I've been to, on football front, caught Tom Brady AFC Championship versus Peyton Manning in the snow where they won. I've been spoiled. I've been pretty spoiled for sure.
So let me ask you this, like, side note here. Not free, because obviously the answer is yes, but if you had the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl but you had to pay, do you have any interest in doing that?
No.
Me either. It just seems too big and too crazy, and it's also like 10 grand or something crazy, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not 10, maybe like 5?
No, I think it's closer to 10 now.
Dude, that's
crazy. I think
where
it used to be like 5, yeah.
It's also because of like the crazy new stadiums and stuff too, I'm sure.
Like, I know, but dude, the nosebleeds that you can pay $40 to $30 for at a Chargers game, being like not like a $5,000 seat is just
stupid,
despicable.
Yeah,
it's despicable. I understand like being in the room, but the rooms are getting too big to like really fathom, and I feel that on like a NBA front it sometimes too. Like I'm pretty curious what this Clippers court is going to feel like. Apparently he's building, I don't know if he's stuck with this design idea, but there's one side that he's designated as the wall. And so like the first row and the back row of the entire stadium, like there's no disruption. Like you can walk it like it's the Coliseum. But I don't know if he went through with that, but like, I don't know. Is this going to be like a, just a crazy big stadium. I don't know.
I'm interested to see that one too. When is it supposed to open? Next season?
I think one more.
Okay.
I think they got one more. I think it's like not ready for 23-24, but ready for 24-25.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, I should say that I was just in LA last week. We didn't get to record an episode because we were a little bit concerned about releasing it if the Celtics had lost.
Yeah, yeah. So we did get to record, but we weren't sure that it would be worth your time to hear anything we had to say.
But with that being said, that my point is that I'm out there fairly often, so I'm excited to go to that new stadium when that opens up.
I know. I'm just, you know how close I am to the Crypt.
For sure.
And them being a little brother in that stadium in such a major way just made those tickets so affordable.
For sure.
Like in really great seats for really cheap amount of money to see like them play significant teams. And if you were lucky, Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, not usually would play. But if not, it was still fun to go. And I just Ballmer building his own stadium. Now it's down in Inglewood near SoFi, which isn't that close. And I just can't imagine the tickets remaining anywhere near the same across the board.
I guess it'll depend on what the attendance
is. I'm excited to check
like.
It out, but
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, I just like to check
out
new stadiums.
I don't know how many
stadiums.
I'll be at, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I'm glad the Kings aren't moving, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that would be kind of crazy.
You know how much I don't want to go to Anaheim, so.
Too bad, we're going back next year.
I mean, I got once a year in me. I do. The Sox are coming to play the Angels next week, and I'm like, oh.
Let's go, Dogs!
May again. It's going like August. We'll see.
All right, so what's your confidence level going into the series? What last thing before we wrap this up? You feeling good? I know you said you're thinking maybe five, but no less than six. It could be five, but you feel good about the series or you feel worried? What do you feel more of?
I feel good about the final result of the series. I'm worried about how long it takes to get through it.
It's not about the journey, dude. It's about the destination, okay?
Yeah, but it's like getting there faster and not having people fall apart is pretty helpful.
For sure. That's what it is in every
knocking on wood, not throwing any weirdness into the whatever, but
well, I'm excited that they're back in the Eastern Conference or in the conference finals and one more series to go when we get back to the finals and hopefully be able to do what we weren't able to do last year.
This is the same Final Four as the bubble.
Yuck.
Meaning it's like just a few seasons different. This is the shortest amount of time that there has been a repeat in the conference championships since 1961, when there were only 8 teams in the NBA.
That's wild.
Unbelievable.
To be honest with you, that makes what Miami did to get there more impressive to me. Because they had no business. I mean, yes, they're a good team. They obviously proved why they're in the in the conference finals. But, like, they weren't expecting to be there. Like, that's pretty impressive that they could actually make it that far.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I'm not a Heat fan, I swear.
Yeah, I mean, hats off to the Heat. They've made the Eastern Conference Finals 3 out of the last 4 years. That's pretty remarkable.
But anyway, Celtics are going to beat them, so it's fine. Celtics in 5.
Congrats on your year. Get out of here. Season 5. Got to shut down Lowry. I also think we have the toughest matchup for Butler yet.
I mean, good.
Chris Middleton's been coming off an injury all year. I don't think he's a great wing defender. I don't like who the Bucks threw at him. I think Drew Holiday playing him, and like Jimmy's got him beat in size. We're gonna throw Marcus and then Jaylen and then Jason, and like just cycle repeat at him, and it's It's just, I don't know. I think he's going to have to work harder than he's had to work yet.
Well, they know what to expect. I mean, they've met them in this, in the playoffs, you know, a bunch of times recently. So they know what to do and how to beat them. It's just, can they execute and are they going to drop for them?
The biggest concern, the biggest, like, making me feel like we could lose this.
Coaching?
Yes.
Yep.
Hands down. Eric Spoelstra looking to get to his sixth finals appearance in like a 12-year career. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, that's good.
He's a fantastic coach. I think Joe should just kind of stick to the course of whatever's going on. Our offense still, like, we were making shots yesterday, but the ball movement isn't exciting or looking great. Miami can play defense. We really got to be smart. I hate our passing lanes. I hate some of our turnovers. It's just got to hit shots and clean up the sloppiness. And all should be all right. We are a better team.
Well, I'm excited.
Coaching and us can get in the way. That's it.
For sure. Well, why do you think that it's not, or maybe it's happening and he's just not, and Mazzulla's just not really taking it into account, but wouldn't you think that Brad Stevens, who is, I would say, a better coach for sure, wouldn't you think that he would kind of be meeting with him after these games and being like, hey, in this situation, this would be a better, you know, trying to sort of help him become a better coach, and know he knows the guys on this team, knowing what might help be helpful for them. I just feel like there's some kind of missed opportunities that we've talked about many times where it's like his timeouts and this and that and his management that could be easily adjusted or easily fixed or helped by, you know, some other coach that might be mentoring or something like that. Do you think that's happening, or do you think that it's just kind of he's letting him do his thing?
I'm pretty confused in that regard. It definitely feels like the latter. Definitely feels like he's letting him do his thing. But it's like frustrating, you know, one of the main critiques we have of Joe Mazzulla is that he doesn't call timeouts, right? And so Brad Stevens was a wizard when it came to after timeout calls. I love that he's President Brad, but yeah, he is the better coach as of right now, just based off of experience alone. And you know, he's been there before. You know, he's not an NBA champion coach, but I think he's been fantastic as president. But I mean, dude, he's got the greatest playbook of after timeout calls and plays to set up.
Yeah.
I think this team is lacking play calling. They're heavily lacking adjustments, and they're lacking making those timeout calls. I think just handing him that playbook alone, you would think would add like 8 to 10 points to this team on any given night. But I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like he's involved, though.
Clearly. Unless he's just ignoring it, which I highly doubt as well.
No, it's just, I think it's much more, this is my job, this is your job. You have to, you know, he's still his boss at the end of the day, but I don't know that he's his mentor. You know what I
no,
mean?
No, I don't even mean it like that. I just,
no,
mean,
I know,
you know,
but
giving
like,
him
he,
some pointers.
Like, he's not doing any of that
yeah.
either. But like, that's where this is a unique situation where a coach got promoted. I mean, how often do you see this? Coach got promoted and everyone loved the coach and everyone's happy he's still part of the organization. And this allowed, you know, Ime Udoka to come in. And Ime, I think we can all agree, went to the finals and did a phenomenal job and did some of the things that people are not seeing in Joe that I think they do miss. You know, that implodes in whatever way it is. And now you pick up a guy who was an assistant coach who wasn't even on the front line of the bench. He was sitting in the second row of coaching, and he's the head coach now. The players love him and everything like that, but it's just like, it shouldn't be insulting to have this 34-year-old guy here from the, you know, 40-year-old guy, what it was like to coach at his age in this decade. And also, here's some plays I did that really went well, especially with these players that are still on this team. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like a GM shouldn't necessarily ever be a mentor for a head coach, but it's just like, this is such an incredibly unique situation where maybe it's because it's unprecedented to do such a thing, it's not happening, but I think it could really benefit everybody involved.
I agree.
But again, it really feels like it's not happening. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to watch these, you know, couple games before we record the next episode, and see how they look. I mean, like we said, the first couple of games are really going to be a tell of how the series is going to go. Obviously, we don't want to go down in the series, but we've been in that position before. I hate playing from behind. So I hope that's not the case. Hope that when we do our next episode, we're talking happy topics here. And yeah, go C's.
Go C's, baby. I'm stoked. We made it. That was brutal.
I knew that once they pushed to 7 that they were going to take it, but, you know, obviously game 7 is, you know, all or nothing. So they happened to pull it out, and it wasn't even close in that, you know, once the second half hit, but it wasn't even close, and I hope that's how the rest of this series goes.
Yeah, I felt better about 7 than I felt about 6, for sure.
For sure, yeah. So. All right.
Yeah, good to see you this week.
for a day.
Yeah. A nice in and out and hanging my work night.
Literal in and out.
Yeah. In every way.
But I'll be back.
But mostly the mustard fried burgers.
Let's go. I can't wait to go back to In-N-Out.